On this week's Know Them From Adam podcast, we get ready for the upcoming NFL season with the two people who will be calling the second Monday Night Football game on ESPN, Rex Ryan and Beth Mowins, both with big, significant jobs for the coming season. Rex Ryan will make his debut on Sunday NFL Countdown on ESPN, 10 a.m. Eastern every Sunday morning. Beth Mowins will be in the booth for ESPN and become the first female broadcaster to call a nationally televised NFL game and the first female announcer to call an NFL game since Gail Sirens called a regional broadcast of a 1987 regular season game. And then, because it's opening week, we're going to be joined by a third special guest, Thomas George, a friend, mentor, and author who just wrote a new book called Blitzed: Why NFL Teams Gamble on Starting Rookie Quarterbacks. But first, Rex Ryan. Rex, what's interesting to me as I look this over is, and correct if I'm wrong, you have been a coach every year since the middle of the 80s, the middle of 1980s. This is the first year in 30 plus years, right?
Right.
That you're not coaching. What has that been like for you after 30 years of coaching every summer, getting ready for the season, not to have to do that?
Well, Adam, I think first off, strange is, I guess that's the only way you can put it, but I don't know if it does it, justice. I mean, this feels so weird, not coaching, not preparing, not teaching. It just, it feels so weird and so different. Now, the one good part is, you don't lose. I think that's, even these preseason games, let's face it, nobody cares. You're trying to evaluate your players and all that. Nobody cares until, you're in that game. Then you're like, oh, hell, let's win this thing, But it really does. It really feels strange. And especially I've been in the NFL for so many years that I miss it. There's no question about it. You can't, right now there's no scoreboard. I'm not coaching to a scoreboard or anything else. And so I definitely miss the camaraderie of the players, coaches, front office, maybe not as much in some places, but front office. And then, and then I miss the competition, and matching yourself against the best.
How have you spent the added free time that you've never had in the summer?
I've been eating a whole lot. I try to play golf and, emphasis on the trying. Like, I'm brutal. I think I get worse. But, you do have some free time to do that. And that's relaxing. And, it's pretty fun. But really, I've been going around different places, able to travel a little bit, now that I have this free time. So that's pretty much what I've been doing.
On the first Sunday of the season, when everyone's getting ready to play that first game, what do you think will be going through your mind at that time?
Well, I think first off, Adam, I'll be doing, I'll have a new job, so to speak. The great thing is my job consists of talking football. So that'll be pretty fun. But I'm on that countdown show, with Charles Woodson and Randy Moss and Sam Ponder and Matt Hasselbeck. So I'm looking forward to that. So that'll keep me busy. And, I'm just a fan of football anyway. So I'll be watching, starting on Thursday night, I'll be watching all the games and I'm a fan of college football as well. So, that's going to be, fun. I'll be excited to do that. But I also think at some point I'll be pulling my hair out that I'm not coaching.
You do, huh?
I think so, yep.
So does that mean that one day we're going to lose you from Countdown to go back into coaching again?
I think, Adam, the good thing about this is I'm going to find out if I like it, and I'm going to find out if anybody likes me doing that job. So I think that's a good combination. And, maybe I'll fall in love with it. Maybe I won't want to get back into coaching. But, and I'll have a whole season, to see what it's like. And so I think that's good. Right now, if I was a betting man, you never say never to anything. Mm-hmm. But I definitely miss teaching and I miss coaching.
Let me make a prediction right now. We could play this back a few years from now. It's sort of like John Gruden and Herm Edwards. You go do this and you think, okay, this is temporary. This is not permanent. I miss coaching football. But then you get into this and you realize how much more balanced and peaceful your life is during the season. And you recognize that on Sunday nights, you don't lay awake in the middle of the night wondering why a certain play happened and why a result unfolded. So my prediction is you're going to like this even more than you realize. And you're going to miss the coaching, but you're going to say, why would I ever want to do that again when I got this balance in my life?
I think the big part is not whether I'll enjoy doing this. I think the biggest thing is, you know, those other guys you mentioned, Herm and Gruden, and, you know, there's other guys, and they're good at it. I don't know if I'll be any good at this.
You're going to be great at this.
I guess we'll find out.
You're going to be great at this. I promise you, you're going to be great at this. Because you go out and you talk about what you know and what you think and what you feel. And as long as you love football, and you do, and as long as you love talking about football, and you do, how can you not succeed at it?
Yeah, well, you know, that's true. And everybody says, you know, Adam, everybody says, well, just be yourself. I'm like, okay. I said, but be careful what you wish for.
Well, if you're yourself, then that's going to work. Has anybody given you any input, anybody you've turned to, about how to handle TV, coaching tips about being in TV, anything like that?
Well, most of the things, I literally get that, you know, just be yourself and let it fly, and that'll be great. But if you're, you know, if I'm trying to be like everybody else and be buttoned up, that's not going to work for me. I'll struggle with that, I believe.
That is just being yourself. How much attention have you paid to the NFL this summer?
Quite a bit. You know, I watch quite a bit, and I've also done, Adam, I've done a few games, like practice games, because I have the second Monday night game. Yep. And so I went and I saw Jacksonville in Tampa. That was a pillow fight right there. I mean, I forget what the score was, but it was awful. Then I followed that up with the Giants versus Cleveland, another great game.
yep.
But that's, you know, so I've been watching those teams, and then you know, also reading up on the league. And like I say, you know, I'm a fan of football first. You know, that was my first love. And, you know, I've only been a coach for 30 years, but I've been a fan of football for 54 years. So, you know, I've been following it, and I'm excited about it. Let's see what happens. I think taking away Edelman from the Patriots may balance things up a little bit. You know, I hate to see that for him. I think when those two guys, you know, with the additions that New England made, and you had Edelman, that was going to be really tough. You know, I'm not sure anybody could have beat him. But right now, maybe there's an opportunity for another team to pop up in there.
So you think the loss of Edelman is that big to New England?
I think so. That's his safety net. And it's easy to say that, you know, well, you know, they got Cooks now. They can you know, plug him in. Well, he's a different kind of receiver. The other thing that Brandon Cooks has not shown, he's an explosive guy, and the talent is there, and he's a great, you know, young man, and he's going to do awesome there. But the durability, you know, the durability of Edelman and you know, Welker before that, that was it. Those guys, you can count on those guys playing. And, you know, we'll see. I think Cook sometimes wears down a little bit at the end of seasons. At least it appeared that way to me. So we'll see how it goes, you know, here in New England now with them.
What is it with the Patriots adding former Bills, like Mike Gillisley, Chris Hogan? How is Gillisley going to fare there? You know him very well.
I do. I love Touchdown Mike is what I call him because, as my dad famously said about Chris Carter, all he does is score touchdowns. Well, that's when we got Mike Gillisley. All he did was score touchdowns. And so I called him Touchdown Mike. But he's he's really a good back. And, you know, it's he kind of burst on the scene. He was our third-string running back. We picked him up. Doug Whaley picked him up on waivers, and all of a sudden this kid came in, and we had to play him. We had a bunch of injuries to our two starters. And when we played the kid, it was like, shoot, this guy's good. So I think they just get another back. And the way Belichick does, you never know which back you're going to get. But he's going to feature one of them. And I think Gillisley will have a shot. He's not going to be an every-down back. But there'll be games where he plays a prominent role, and he'll be ready for it.
Has it surprised you how much success Chris Hogan has had there?
No, this one drives me crazy right here.
Really? How come?
this one drives me crazy because that was the one player I definitely did not want to lose when I was at Buffalo. Not only was he really our best receiver that year, remember, he was third, I think, in the league in yards per reception. He averaged over 17 yards a catch, so that was impressive. But he was also our best special team player that year.
Wow.
Like, this kid's a great football player, great competitor, and a great athlete. You know, obviously, he was a multi-sport athlete in college, and you don't want to lose these guys. And, you know, he was tough. He was everything you look for. And then, of course, not only do, you know, we put some tag on him, but we never put, you know, a second-round tender. Obviously, if we would have put a second-round tender on there, we probably still would have had him. But the fact we didn't, they were able to come in and they snagged him for money that we couldn't pay. So, yeah, absolutely, I hated to lose him. But I'm excited that he did a good job. And, you know, Adam, you mentioned how they're stealing players from teams. Bill Parcells one time told me a long time ago, he says, when you have a new head coach, you can take advantage of that. And that's what you're kind of seeing right now. These aren't, the Bills' new GM or head coach, all these guys, they're not their players.
Mm-hmm.
So this was an opportunity for Belichick to get better, and he did. He picks up Gillislee. Obviously, Gilmore, he picks up, pays a big free agent ticket on him, but that's why he ends up taking advantage of that. And you'll see it with Belichick. Anytime there's a new head coach, he tries to maybe tinker a little bit with that. And if he can get a player out of these guys, that's what he does.
And I'm going to get back to Gilmore in a moment because he was the other Bill, former Bill, that I wanted to ask you about, him going to New England. But let's practice for TV right here, Rex. What was your reaction when you found out that the Patriots signed Chris Hogan to that offer sheet?
let's just say I wasn't real happy. You know, at first, here's what happened. This is how uninformed I was at that time. I'm thinking, okay, well, we get a second-round pick.
Oh, wow.
And so I was disappointed, but I'm like, all right, hey, we at least get a, you know, we'll get a second round pick, so that's pretty cool. No, the tender wasn't high enough. So then that's when I think I left the office. I was not happy. Let's just put it that way. And then the fact that you got to go against the guy.
Yeah.
That was, you know, but that's it. And that's what he does. He'll make a team worse and make his own team better. And that's just brilliant. You know, that's a guy that runs a whole show. You know, he runs the entire program, whether it's the draft, handling the draft, trades, free agents, whatever. And obviously the guy knows football better than anybody out there. And that's why I think he takes advantage of running his own show. Look, he made a mistake. He signed Coney Ealy or whatever his name is from Carolina, second, third round pick, whatever he gives up. He didn't care. He just cuts him.
That was eight spots in the draft. They traded a second pick at the end of the round for Ealy and a third round pick. So they really traded eight spots in the draft.
Yeah.
They didn't lose a pick for Ealy, and it didn't work out, and they moved on.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of it. Like, you make a mistake, you're not going to be perfect on every move that you make, but he's got the courage to say, you know what, this isn't right. And maybe the kid doesn't love football. I don't know. You know, he's had his moments in the league. Some good, some bad, but you know what? He never fit what they wanted to do. Maybe he wasn't, you know, a student of the game as much, you know, as Belichick wanted, and he just got rid of him. And you know, but the kudos to him. And he's got all the pelts in the world, so every decision he makes, he's doing for the right reason, and that's for the good of the team, not for an appearance of, hey, this is good. You got this superstar, and he can't play dead in a B Western anymore. Like, so there's teams that do those moves, and it doesn't work out. This guy does what's best for his team.
And how is Stephon Gilmore going to fare in New England?
Oh, it'll be fantastic. Stephon Gilmore is a great player. His only thing, or a super player, his only issue was staying healthy. You know, I had him, he was coming off an injury when I had him. He had a shoulder injury. But when this guy's healthy and keyed in, he's right up there in the conversation with the best corners in the league.
Wow. That good.
Yeah, he's really good, and he's in his prime. You know, so I think that's the other thing. He got a player in his prime, not at the end of his career, but at the beginning of his career, and or you know at the midpoint of his career when he should be at his best. So I'm expecting big things out of Stephon.
Now Buffalo's been very active this summer, Rex, trading Reggie Ragland, trading Sammy Watkins, trading Ronald Darby. What is your assessment of moving on from those particular players?
Well, if you think guys don't fit your system or whatever, then that's great. Don't put a square peg in a round hole. Look, I made that mistake, you know. I had Mario Williams. I'm trying to do something with him, and all he did was because he dropped. But he did have 5 sacks, and last year he had 1 sack with Miami, so I don't know who was, you know, who the problem was, me or him. But either way, it was, you know, if they don't fit your system, that they're for whatever reason, maybe they're not, you know, the kind of person you want on your team. Maybe they don't have the work ethic that you're looking for. Maybe there's something in their character you don't like. And I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know if that's the case with those players, but maybe it's, you know, you're playing in a defense and you got a corner without any deep ball skills. That's one reason probably Ronald Darby's not there. You know, it's hard to, in that type of system, you want a guy with some ball skills. And, you know, Darby's a man-under type corner. He doesn't necessarily have the ball skills down the field. So I can see that move happening. Mm-hmm. I could see, you know, Sammy Watkins obviously was coming off an injury 2 years in a row. I mean, he played about half the time when I had him. And the last year he played with a broken foot. So is he healthy? If he's healthy, they made a horrible mistake.
Buffalo.
Because he's a top 10 talent. Yeah, Buffalo did.
Yeah.
But if he's not healthy, then it obviously is a good, you know, then they make a good thing. They at least get something out of him, which would be a second-round pick.
And what about Reggie Ragland?
If he's healthy, that's a big mistake. Well, same thing with Reggie. Reggie's coming off an injury. Reggie was the best player we had in training camp my first year there, and unfortunately he got hurt. So how he's come off this injury, he was third team, you know, with Buffalo. So he was literally running with the third team. So what that tells you about Reggie, system fit, whether maybe he was, you know, maybe he wasn't all the way back from an injury, whatever it is, you know, they never liked him because Doug Whaley drafted him. I don't know what it is. But I can tell you this, when I had him in training camp, I thought he was going to be a star. And when he went down, that was a huge blow to us.
So how does a guy go from being the best player in training camp for you to being on the third team this summer? That's strange.
Yeah, it's strange. But, again, there's, you know, nobody was there. Nobody was in meetings. Nobody, you know, sometimes when, you know, guys don't come back from injuries. I don't know, you know, in this particular case. This is an outstanding young man. I hope for his sake that he's healthy and it just wasn't a fit for whatever reason. But, I think Kansas City got – I think they got a heck of a football player here. And maybe he won't – you know, as mentioned, maybe this is an injury that takes a little longer to heal. But if this kid comes back to full speed, I love him. He was smart, dedicated, and – you know, he's tough. He's a big guy. He's a real linebacker. He can play in the 3-4 or 4-3 defense. Obviously, Nick Saban had this kid directing their defense, so he can handle it mentally. He can do multiple things. I think he's in a perfect fit in Kansas City because they run a very similar defense to Alabama, and obviously Bob Sutton there, having worked with me for all those years. With the Jets. So I think it's a great fit for him.
Did Bob Sutton call you before that deal at all?
No, I'm sure this was kind of a no-brainer deal. You're getting you're giving up a fourth-round pick in 2019. I think this is pretty much a no-brainer deal.
Rex, you know the Bills well. You know the Pegulas well. You know how everything works. How do you think they're going to fare this season, and do you think that they're angling for a quarterback in the 2018 NFL draft?
Well, that may be the angle. They're going to have plenty of firepower, you know, 2 first-round picks. And you know, you got to tip your hat to Doug Whaley. He ended up, he could have made that draft pick. Instead, he did what was best for the organization. Anytime you get a first-round pick, to trade up for the, you know, to move down nine spots or whatever, then and your player's not there, then you're going to make that move. And that's what he did. So he picked up that pick. I think that's a great move. But I truly think there's too many good players on that team. At least that was what was told to me when I was let go, that the expectations would be, you know, to finish, you know, not to have a good year. So I'm expecting them to have a great year.
How did it come to be that you got let go in the last week of the season on a Tuesday? I remember the timing of that being rather unusual. Usually teams that make moves, they do it a few weeks out or they do it right at the beginning of the week. But yours, if I remember correctly, came on a Tuesday.
Well, Adam, I think first off, my relationship with Terry Pegula, I thought the world of Terry Pegula. And to this day, I still, you know, in a fan of Terry's. Now, granted, it was, you know, I don't agree with the decision he made of letting me go. But you know what? That's the way it is in this business. But Terry was a man to me. You know, I asked specifically about, you know, my situation. He told me that he was going to go a different direction. Thought he'd go a different direction. So when he told me about, you know, when things were clear that they wanted to play EJ Manuel that last game, I thought it sent a terrible message to the team. Mm-hmm. And that's why I said, well, if you're going to do that, I'd just soon let you, you know, you let me go now. And it was hard for me to do because, you know, quite honestly, I would have won that last game and I would have been 8-8, probably one of the only coaches ever to not have a losing record with Buffalo. But you know what? It meant more to me, you know, that this was a decision I was not going to make. So if I would have stayed coach, I would have played Tyrod anyway. And that wasn't going to be good for anybody.
Now, one of your deputies, Anthony Lynn, took over as the interim coach when you left. How is he going to fare in Los Angeles with the Chargers as their head coach?
I think Anthony's a star. I had him for 8 years. I was blessed to have him. I knew I had one of the best coaches in the National Football League that was with me. And I think Anthony will be great. He's smart as can be. And the one thing, you know, we talked several times, and he was my assistant head coach. And what I did when I was with John Harbaugh, John made me assistant head coach. And sometimes those things are just, yeah, we'll give you a title and a couple thousand dollars. But what John did for me, I did for Anthony. And that's let him sit side by side with me on decisions being made for that we can control, on the organizational part of it, you know, making practice schedules, why we do things, all that type of stuff. He was privy to, you know, sitting there with me when we did all that stuff. So he's ready for this. The thing that he did that I did, like when I went to the Jets, I had a chance to keep a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. Well, I recognized Bill Callahan. I wasn't going to get a better offensive line coach than Bill Callahan. And he was there. I was able to retain him. You know, I had to kiss his butt a little bit, but I kept him. You know, I was able to keep him. Mike Westhoff, best coach I ever had. And was, you know, he was my special team coach. So we had an unbelievable staff. And that's what you got to do in this league. You got to have people that, number one, support you and have the same mindset. You know, it's hard to be all in when your coaching staff's not all in. So they ought to be, you got to make sure that the loyalty, number one, and then what they're bringing to the table with their expertise, and the commitment, you know, to the players that they make. That's what you bring in, and that's what I did. So with the Jets, we had some great coaches. He kept them. Same thing with Anthony. Ken Wisenhunt is there as the offensive coordinator, and most of the coaching staff was already there. And then for him to come in, and he said, you know what? This guy's a great football coach. Let's keep Ken Wisenhunt as the OC, and I'm going to come in anyway. He's a great coach, and he did that. You know, most guys who aren't as secure with themselves or whatever, they're just going to get, you know, somebody else in there. But he did that, and I think that was a great move. And then obviously he was able to get Gus Bradley to be his defensive coordinator and George Stewart to be his special team coach. So I think he's got a phenomenal staff. And then when you look at it, oh, by the way, you have Phillip Rivers. So protect him. He went out and said, let's protect the franchise. We got to get better up front. They bring in Russell Okung, I think is a great player. You know, still has, you know, one of the better left tackles in the league. So I think, you know, he's made a lot of really solid moves already. You know, unfortunately, he's got the injury to Mike Williams, his first round pick, and Forrest Lamp, his second round pick. And, you know, you can't see that happening. But hopefully those kids will come back, and they're going to be major contributors in this league in the near future. But, you know, especially with Mike Williams, hopefully, you know, in a month or so he's ready to come back. But I like what they have offensively. And then on defense, they have a lot of playmakers on defense. So I think Anthony's going to do really well.
You bring up a lot of playmakers on defense. Rex, give me one guy in the league that nobody talks about that's better than people realize. And I know there are a lot of them, but I'm just one guy that just pops to your mind as a player who's massively underrated and doesn't get the attention he deserves.
On defense?
Yeah.
Okay, on defense? Well, I think, you know, even looking at, there's a couple of them, and I've been studying these teams, so I'm going to bring both of them up there. I think Wolf, the defensive tackle from Denver, unfortunately he got hurt again. Mm-hmm. But I think he's an outstanding player, can play him all over the place. I think he is underrated. And Ingram is another guy, multi-talented guy. You can play him everywhere, intelligent player, can play him up, down, inside, outside, and he enjoys that. He's not going to look at you as, you know, with his, you know, thinking you're crazy, but you're not just rushing him as an outside. You can put him anywhere. I think
Melvin
he's
Ingram,
really underrated.
Melvin Ingram,
yeah,
right?
Melvin Ingram.
Wolf, yep.
Yep.
And anybody on offense that stands out? Yep.
No, they all stink. No, I'm just kidding.
I know you feel that way.
I think Sanu. I've always been a fan of Sanu when he was in Cincinnati for all those years. And then he goes to Atlanta. What's the difference? They still have Julio Jones. They still got all these great players. But Sanu is one of those guys that he just gets open. You need a big catch at a time. He's the guy that moves the chains on you and he kills you. So I think he's a guy that's underrated. Robert Woods might be another guy, you know, that we had in Buffalo. Just a solid receiver. Doesn't have great speed, but just a solid guy. So I think he'll do well with the Rams.
And the 49ers happen to like Marquise Goodwin quite a bit, too, your former wide receiver in Buffalo.
Oh, we don't even start with me on him. That's my secret weapon.
Their secret weapon, too.
Well, and that's the funny thing. Here's a young man that he was getting in, you know, all the track and everything else that he did. And it's like, you know, as a coach, you got to be smart. There's some players you don't need to go over the middle. And some you got to teach, hey, get down. If you're anywhere inside those numbers, and it's not man coverage, not just catch and run, then look to get down and protect yourself. You know, the little kid Sanders from Denver. Emmanuel Sanders. He does it as well as anybody. So those are things you got to do to protect yourself, because this little guy thinks he's 6'5" and 220 pounds. So if you can keep him from hurting himself, he's got a chance now. And the thing about him is, the explosive speed, nobody's faster in the league than this kid.
Yep.
He's a phenomenal young man, and I love it. He's just now coming into his own, because usually all the spring he's been training for Olympics, long jumping, all those type of track events, and now it's all football. And so I'm so happy that they're excited about him, because I think he's got a chance. I always told our coaches, I said, look, there's two routes I know he's going to be open on 100% of the time, and that's going to be a stop and a comeback, because everybody's going to read the scouting report, and all you got to do is run them one time vertically, and those guys are going to be like, oh, my goodness. You know, so he's got that kind of speed, I'm really happy that they realize what they have there.
So how is this season going to end? Who is the one team that can challenge the Patriots in the AFC or the NFC in your mind?
You know, the first thought would be, first thing that jumps to your mind is the Raiders. But I don't like the way the Raiders play defense. They have a lot of good players, but I can't stand watching them play defense. Hmm. It's just vanilla, and they've been getting carved up and down the field. And I think at some point you got to at least be able to play some kind of defense. The one positive about the Raiders that I can say is at the end of a game, they never gave up a point. So if they could just somehow find that way to do it, whether it's in the second half, four quarter games, whatever. But if they can, you know, they do it at the biggest moments, how come they can't do it for a whole game? Like, that is the reason I don't think they'll compete with them. I love what they have. I love Carr as the quarterback. They got two outstanding receivers. And then you have Marshawn Lynch that kind of, you know, how he's going to be, I don't know. But he is tougher than heck, I can tell you much. So, you know, that offensive line is solid. So I think offensively they can compete with anybody, but I don't think their defense is, you know. And with that being said, they got some of the best defensive players in the league, you know, especially with Mac and Reggie Nelson out there. So we'll see how they go. But the teams, you know, I think when you look at it, Pittsburgh, when you look at the best combination quarterback, receiver, running back in the league, you got to put them right at the top. And if they can play a little better defense, they might be the team that can compete with New England.
My last few things here before I let you go, and I thank you for your time, Rex. I always like to end these calls with what I call last calls. So I'd like to know, if you don't mind, the last time that you cried.
Oh, probably this morning. I'm Irish, dude. I cry all the time.
Emotional, huh?
I am. Yeah, that's one thing about me. But I don't know when the last time I cried is. But you know what? I've never been afraid to cry. And I'm, you know, I guess I am Irish. So, you know, I come by that honestly.
Last meal on earth, if you had it, what would it be and where would it be, Rex?
Oh, it's some all-you-can-eat Mexican food, because I'm going to do it upright. I'm going to have it all, man. We're going tacos, burritos, we're doing it all, and I'm going to have it. I tell you, the restaurant I'm going to have it at, I'm giving my buddy a plug here, Red Cadillac in New Jersey. It's in between Summit and Elizabeth, New Jersey. It's phenomenal, and my buddy Joe out there is the owner, and it's the best, so. That would be my last meal.
Look forward to that. And who would you have at that meal with you, Rex, if I could give you any four invites to hand out?
Dude, I got to go with the old lady, but, you know, I got to have her. You know, we've been married 30 years. I got to have her, but Heather Locker's going to be at that table with me. I can tell you that much.
Your wife will be okay with that, huh?
Hey, it doesn't matter. It's my last meal anyway. Who cares?
Hey, Rex, I want to thank you for the time today. I appreciate you joining us. I look forward to working with you on Sundays. You're going to have a great time on the show and then afterwards in the war room as you watch all the games. You're going to love it.
That sounds really good, Adam, and I look forward to seeing you.
Thanks so much for the time.
All right, bye.
Take care. You're listening to the Northern From Adam podcast, and we'll be back with Beth Mowins in just a moment. But first, a word from ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then, their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job, better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employees who post a job on ZipRecruiter get quality candidates through the site within one day. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter is being used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/knowthem. One word, know them. That's ZipRecruiter/knowthem. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/knowthem. And now joining us, a historical figure, a woman who will be a part of ESPN's Monday Night Football broadcast in the second game, Beth Mowins. And I want to know what it means to you to become the first female broadcaster to call a nationally televised NFL game and the first female announcer to call an NFL game since your friend Gail Sirens called a regional broadcast of a 1987 regular season game.
Well, it feels really good, Adam, and I think first and foremost, as a play-by-play announcer, it's something that I've always wanted to do, and It's something that I've worked hard my whole career to put myself in a position to get this opportunity. And a lot of guys helped me along the way, a lot of mentors, a lot of male role models. So I think for me, on the one hand, I'm grateful to all those guys. And on the other hand, I hope that maybe we can start a new trend for a lot of young girls out there that think it's important to see a woman in this position, that now maybe they have somebody to look up to and something to shoot for themselves.
Beth, how much are you reminded of the fact that you are this history-making figure on a regular basis now?
Probably a little more than I care to. I grew up a point guard, and I've always been a part of teams, and being a team member and a teammate has always been foremost on my mind. Even as a broadcaster, you're a part of a team. Your crew is all your teammates. So it's a little strange getting the attention sometimes about being a woman as opposed to just being a good play-by-play announcer, but at the same time, I understand the significance and the importance to a lot of people, and I certainly don't want to take that lightly. And the thing that I've learned about Rex and I, you know, just from working together a little bit, and our whole crew, we're competitive people, and we want to do well. We want to be successful for all the people that have believed in us over the years and that believed in us enough to give us this opportunity.
Now, we're going to get to Rex and Monday Night Football in a few moments, but I think you mentioned that you were a point guard. How do you go from being a point guard to being a Monday Night Football and NFL announcer?
If you take just a moment to think about point guards that you've watched over the years and admired over the years, they tend to be really good leaders. They tend to be people that want the ball in their hands and tend to embrace pressure situations and decision-making moments. And so that's kind of the environment I grew up in. My dad was a high school basketball coach. I had three brothers. We were constantly playing games. And as it so happened, Adam, I love to talk as well as play sports. So I would literally have a running commentary going throughout the course of our wiffle ball games and our kickball games as a little kid. And then as I got older and I became a huge football fan as well as basketball, just watching a ton of Pat Summerall over the years and watching a lot of Jim Nance over the years. And then it was Al Michaels and then a lot of Syracuse guys that I knew. I figured that role was probably better suited than me. I probably wasn't going to be, the Hall of Fame quarterback or the Super Bowl winning head coach. So I figured I better try and be the other guy in the booth.
Have you ever had the chance to get broadcasting advice from any of those people that you mentioned, Pat Summerall or Al Michaels or Jim Nance or anybody like that?
You know, that's probably been one of the most rewarding things for me. Is certainly over the years through my Syracuse connections, I've gotten to know Mike Tirico and Sean McDonough quite well, and they've been terrific. And just over the last, 6 months or so, you get a chance to just chat for a little bit or exchange emails with an Al Michaels or a Jim Nance, a Greg Gumbel, a lot of the people that you looked up to and respected and admired when you were younger. And then certainly, it's been great to stay in touch with a lot of the women that I've come up through the ranks with, whether it's a Doris Burke or a Holly Rowe or a Jessica Mendoza, and sort of share stories and share ideas and advice. That's been, I think, something that's been really special for me. That's the most important thing, I think, is to earn the respect of your teammates and earn the respect of your peers, and that's what I certainly hope to do.
Anything you've taken away from them that you will remember here going forward in the season to come?
I think probably first and foremost is don't try and be something you're not. Be yourself. Prepare and do your homework and do your research the exact same way you've always done it. I think there's been little. Sometimes it's in the little details. Don't forget to say when you move on to call an NFL game, know a little bit about the ownership and know who the people are, the decision making personnel that you may have to reference over the course of the game. it's nice to have a little nugget on the official, for example. If he's the guy that's been, called a couple Super Bowls, that's something nice to just drop into the conversation. Little details like that. Make sure you know who the emergency quarterback is. You never know. And that's even come up in our college games in the past. You may have to get to a third or fourth quarterback. Hopefully you don't, but you want to, I think probably the bottom line in all of that is that you want to be prepared for anything.
Yep.
And you hope that you don't have to talk about any of it because it's a great game and it's a close game.
You're listening to the Northern From Adam podcast, and we'll be back with Beth Mowins in just a moment. But first, you've been waiting for this since February 6th. Football season is here, and there's no better way to get closer to the game you love than with DraftKings 1 Week Fantasy Football. To celebrate, DraftKings is hosting a $100,000 contest this Sunday that's totally free to enter. And if you draft the perfect lineup, you can win $1 billion. With DraftKings, there are many ways to play. Choose between public contests with big cash prizes or private contests where you can compete against a group of your friends. DraftKings also has beginner and casual contests where you'll play against people of similar skill level. The best part is you get to draft a new team each week without any commitment. So get to DraftKings.com now and use promo code Schefter, S-C-H-E-F-T-E-R, Schefter, to play in DraftKings free contest with $100,000 in total prizes this Sunday. And if you draft the perfect lineup, you can win $1 billion. That's promo code Schefter, S-C-H-E-F-T-E-R, to play for your shot to win $1 billion this Sunday. The contest is totally free to enter. Why wouldn't you try? DraftKings, the game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Now, how often would you practice calling Monday Night Football games as a child, Beth?
Oh, gosh. Hundreds and hundreds of times.
That
I'd
often?
Sitting in front of the TV, you know, and I wouldn't have the whole setup with the headset, but certainly I would be paying attention to how they were calling a game. And, the thesaurus was a friend of mine from a very early age, back in the days before it was on your phone. It was actually a book. And I would try and pick up as much as I can. I still tell younger people today that want to do play-by-play, you'd be surprised at how much you can pick up just by listening to games and what you like and what you don't like to try and incorporate into your own calls.
What advice would you give to these young broadcasters today that are trying to crack into the business?
I think they're in a good position because there are so many more opportunities for them to get reps. And I think that's the big thing. As many repetitions as you can get calling games is huge. So, for example, when I was starting up, you know, you may have to go to a small town USA. And in my case, it was Homer, New York, in upstate New York, where I had a chance to get on the air right away and call play-by-play right away. And that was huge. And now, you know, you have more opportunities to do that on the internet. I think minor league baseball is a great place for a lot of younger people to get, you know, go to a single A, double A, call it on the radio, 40, 50 games a summer. That stuff is priceless in terms of getting your reps in to find your voice and find your sound.
What is the most memorable game that you've called to date?
Ooh, that's a good one. You know, the things that, you know, hit off the top of my head would be probably an NBA radio game that I got to call with Dr. Jack Ramsey, and Michael Jordan was playing in that game.
Wow.
The opportunity to call the Women's Final Four a couple of years ago, and it was Syracuse from my hometown and Brianna Stewart, who was from my high school, playing on the other side for Connecticut. That was kind of neat to be a part of that history. Those are probably just a couple that I can think of off the top of my head. And to be honest, the Women's College World Series the last 5-10 years has been incredible drama. So it's those moments where you have student athletes or you have professional athletes that when they are called upon to make the big play in that big moment, that they rise to that occasion. I think there's something very special about putting a voice to those moments.
Now, you and Rex Ryan have spent some time together this summer preparing for this opening Monday night broadcast this season. What did you learn about Rex and the time that you spent together at the Bucks, Jags, and the Browns and the Giants, other than watching those bad football games?
I think my preseason count will be 7 games this
wow.
year, Adam. So
that's a lot, Beth.
I've seen my fill of those. You know what? I've got plenty of film material for any game that comes my way this year. I think the one thing I've learned about Rex is, as amazing as his ability to recall things X and O-wise, to talk about football, he has just as much good stuff about the players of in the game, the personalities. I think he's going to be a great storyteller on Monday night and provide a little different insight. And he's got a wonderful sense of humor. So we've had a lot of laughs. We've had a really good time. I have teased him about, you're probably familiar, your listeners might not be, with card 99 in the ESPN family, which is the apology card in case there's any salty language that happens to make its way on the air. So we've got that at the ready, just in case.
He's fully capable of that, Beth.
He's all American, let me tell you. I've heard it.
It's unbelievable. You better be on the lookout for him this summer.
Oh, yeah. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, even a guy at the top of his profession has been so eager to learn this business and the mechanics and the technical side of how to call a game. And he's really excited to prove that he's come a long way in a short period of time.
Now, you mentioned you've seen 7 preseason games this summer. Give me one thing that stood out to you in the games that you saw.
One thing that stood out to me in the games that we saw.
It could be a thing, a player, a trend.
You know, I think one of the first things that comes to mind is we called that Jacksonville versus Tampa game, and it was what turned out to be a very rough night for Blake Bortles, and how quickly fortunes can change in this league, and really how much every game truly does matters in a guy's career, whether he's at the top of the profession or whether he's fighting for a spot at number 53. And then we also saw Jameis Winston make huge leaps forward through the first couple of possessions for Tampa, and then he had that, I don't know if you remember, he had just a wild throw off of his back foot, falling down. He was almost already on the ground and chucked it up for grabs in the end zone. They got picked off. And you saw a little glimpse of the old Jameis and how difficult it can be, no matter how hard you're working at it, to leave those bad traits behind. And it truly is still a work in progress, even for guys at the top of their game.
Beth, my last thing for you before I let you go, and I thank you for your time today, is I have an 8-year-old daughter. What would you tell her about where society is today in allowing opportunities like the one that you are getting with women as compared to where it was when you were growing up?
Well, to be honest with you, I was watching SportsCenter this morning, and I see the total access that she already gets. you know, talking to Tom Brady, I think she's off and running, to be totally honest with you, Adam. But, you know, I think one of the things that I've really been proud of with the ESPN family over the years is when I was first starting out, you didn't see a whole lot of women in any role on these shows. And now sometimes I've got more women working with me than I do guys. So I think for your daughter and for young women out there, whatever that dream is, whether it's play-by-play or being a sideline reporter or being a producer in the truck or running the network one day, you got to believe it's possible. And you just got to keep fighting from within to try and keep yourself in the conversation when those opportunities arise.
Beth, I want to thank you very much for taking the time today prior to your Monday night broadcast with Rex Ryan. We look forward to hearing you in the booth then, and we look forward to hearing you in the booth the rest of this NFL season and for years to come.
Thank you very much, Adam. I appreciate it. Have a great season.
You too, Beth. Thanks so much.
Our third podcast guest today in the NFL's opening week is somebody I've known for an awful long time. I've known him since I went to the University of Michigan in the mid-1980s. He helped convince me to go into sports reporting initially, And Thomas George, the man who did that, just authored a new book called Blitzed, Why NFL Teams Gamble on Starting Rookie Quarterbacks. Thomas George. What can you tell everybody about your book, Blitzed, Why NFL Teams Gamble on Starting Rookie Quarterbacks? What are the points that you wanted to get across in that book, Thomas?
One of the things that's very, very clear here is that when you look across the spectrum of the NFL, there are so many different components that give the league its appeal, but also present the puzzle and the complicated finding for what success is at how you win Super Bowls. And, you know, this idea or this concept of the franchise quarterback is the one most elusive, most difficult, most complicated element to solve. And, you know, throughout my nearly 30 years of covering the league, I've seen this roller coaster affect what happens when you have the franchise quarterback and what happens when you don't have one. And so from a current as well as historical perspective, I thought it was a real fascinating issue to take a look at. And my research and my interviews and this work certainly did not prove me wrong.
So if I were a general manager or a front office member, and I asked you what you learned about finding a franchise quarterback, which is the single most important issue for any team, I believe in all sports, what would you tell me?
Well, I'd start with the idea of it is really important to get a team together of knowledgeable people who have football knowledge as well as people skills, as well as identifying humanity and trying to put a finger on the individual and on the personality. I mean, I almost think you have to have a level of psychosis involved here, or the psychological, sociological realm, as much as you do in the football element in deciding and identifying who and what that franchise quarterback is. You know, these teams spend a lot of money and a lot of time in the draft process and in the scouting process before the draft, trying to put their finger on who that person is and why they would be deserving to be the face of their franchise. And I think across the board with the 32 teams, there's such a varied opinion and approach in how to do it that that's why we see such mixed results, because some teams go heavy on one end with the personnel side and less on the personality and persona, and then others spend maybe more on who they like as opposed to the football skills involved. So I think you have to have a real comprehensive approach when you're looking at that. And Jeffrey Lurie in this book talks about almost chapter to chapter and verse the Eagles approach in identifying Carson Wentz. And I think that's a great model. They started more than a year out identifying which quarterbacks would be available, how the crop was such for that draft class, getting in position to get to the top, and then narrowing in on Carson Wentz on a very, very wide scope and scale. So I think that's the first part of it, is have a true balanced approach in identifying who that guy is. And then once you get him, what do you do with it? Do you start him right away or do you sit him? And so many factors go into answering that question. You know, who do you have around him? What is your offensive line like? What is the offense you're running? What is his adaptability? You know, what is his learning curve? So that's a really important question to answer as well, because we've seen through some of the flops and through some of the failures, through some of the cruelest term that people call it, the bust. We've seen, and some of those guys are chronicled in our chapter, none more than David Carr in Houston and what happened with him. You've got to have in your mind an approach of what you're going to do. And it's very interesting as you look around the league for this year, the Bears say that Mitchell Trubisky is going to be groomed and that he's going to wait. But that pressure to play this guy and the fact that he may rise above, you know, that whole landscape can shift and change, you know, as the season goes forward. So that'll be a great one to see. And then you've got to have a great head coach quarterback relationship there. The head coach has to be all in with this young man and bring him aboard, not play riddle and mind games with him, but have a sense of clarity in his approach. And then also the quarterback room. I had no inkling when I was writing this book about doing an entire chapter about the quarterback room. But, Adam, I found that to be one of the most fascinating components of this story, of this puzzle, and of this book. Because that,
quarterback room,
the room itself, as described by Terry Robiskie, the Titans offensive coordinator, Tennessee Titans, In theirs, they have an entire room of whiteboard and white wall all around the room. And the plays are all written from floor to ceiling all on the board. And then on the board is an extra room to talk about the game plan for that week. He says every inch of that wall on the four corners is all used except for the ceiling, the floor, and the door. Those are the only things that something isn't written on in that wall. And then he talked about, you know, the Pentagon-like feeling in that room. No one goes in that room except the head coach, the offensive coordinator, the quarterback coach, or the quarterbacks. And sometimes it's even reduced to less than that. He says that even he, as the offensive coordinator, before he goes into the room, knocks out of respect to the quarterback and the others who may be in there. He's the OC. It's really his room as well as those involved. Yet there's such a respect for that room, the engine room of the offense, as he describes it, that he knocks before entering. And so that quarterback room and what happens in that room, and then who is in that room with the quarterback, what veteran do you have around this rookie franchise quarterback teaching him in terms of work ethic and skill and studying and habits that are conducive to success? Those are all critical components in this story.
It's the room where it happens. And in two of the last three drafts, we've seen quarterbacks taken with the first two picks in the draft. Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota in 2015, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz in 2016. You got up close and personal with all of their stories. Which of these quarterbacks has the best chance to succeed and which, in your mind, could fail?
Well, I think that Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota have already shown in their early start that they're going to be forces to be reckoned with. I think that both franchises, the Titans and the Bucks, are doing a good job of building pieces around them. I mean, Jameis Winston has DeSean Jackson this year. They got, you know, Mike Evans was there early on during his time as well. I mean, so they're building some weapons and some components around him. And then the Titans have been drafted with Mariota in mind as well, and adding some critical pieces, DeMarco Murray and others, you know, through trades in the draft that have been really important down there. So I think those guys are up and running. There's no question that Carson Wentz, after last year being brought on board with the idea that we're going to groom him and he's going to play later, and he hit it so hard and so successfully early in camp that when the opportunity came with the Vikings losing Teddy Bridgewater for a trade to happen with Sam Bradford, they felt comfortable escalating the process with Carson Wentz. And I think last year he showed his 16 starts that he has the metal, I think, to be pretty spectacular. I think those three are all on the right track. Jared Goff is the one we don't know about because he went into a very difficult situation, wasn't handled that well. I don't think he grew very well. He didn't play, you know, until late in the season. And now he has a new coaching staff with Sean McVay. He has more weapons around him, but still not all that he needs. I think that Sean McVay and that group are going to have a great chance with him to get him there, but it really is all on his shoulders. How is he going to respond, and is he going to prove himself in an NFL franchise quarterback worthy? He's the one that the questions are all out, and he's the one who will have all eyes on him this year.
And one of the passages in your book was the former Rams head coach, Mike Martz, took some digs, unintentional or intentional, at Sean McVay, saying that he was not old enough to do this job, that he was hired to be Jared Goff's buddy, which was probably an ill-informed statement, being that Sean McVay and Jared Goff didn't even know each other before, and that he wanted to puke when he heard that they hired a 31-year-old head coach. What was your assessment of what went down when Mike Martz sort of corrected what you had put out there before, Thomas?
Well, it was really interesting because as much as he corrected it, he corroborated it in a sense because he says in those comments, well, I kind of see where he's coming from, and I And I do kind of feel that way. And I do want to, but of course, you know, he did say all those things. And I think he said them intentionally and he meant it. And he meant it in April when the interview was done. And then when he actually saw his words in August, it was probably a little bit more than he could swallow even himself.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about that is he is not alone. There are other people in this league who feel like Sean McVay was on such a super fast track when there are other coaches in this league, assistant coaches in this league, who've toiled for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And done great work and haven't had an opportunity to be a head coach. I really like and am impressed with Sean McVay. I think if Jared Goff doesn't make it with Sean McVay, it won't be because of Sean McVay. Nope. It would be because of Jared Goff. And I also believe that what I was told by the Redskins, which is also in this book, people closest to Sean, mm-hmm. is that Sean's approach is going to be, look, I am not necessarily here to prove myself to you, Jared. You're going to have to prove yourself to me that you're going to be our guy, my guy, our franchise quarterback. And that Sean McVay is not going to be hesitant after a relatively short period of time saying, we got to move on. Or, indeed, he can make it. But I think that if there's this idea out there that it's Sean there to not only fix him, but to deal with him ad infinitum and as long as it may take. And I think that the real truth of that is that I think Sean is going to have the authority and the input to say when the time is right, this is going to work or it's not going to work. Let's go.
Thomas George, author of Blitzed, Why NFL Teams Gamble on Starting Rookie Quarterbacks. That book is out now. The afterword is by Tony Dungy. The foreword is by Warren Moon. It is highly recommended. It is excellent reading. It is insightful. It is educational. And it is recommended. Thomas, thank you for taking the time today. Really do appreciate it.
Adam, great to be with you always.